Our second reading this morning is from the Gospel according to Luke, chapter 16, verses 19 through 31. Jesus said, "There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen, and who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate lay a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who longed to satisfy his hunger with what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs would come and lick his sores. The poor man died and was carried away by the angels to be with Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, where he was being tormented, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. He called out, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in agony in these flames.' But Abraham said, 'Child, remember that during your lifetime you received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner evil things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. Besides all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so, and no one can cross from here to us.' He said then, 'Father, I beg you to send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may warn them, so that they will not also come into this place of torment.' Abraham replied, 'They have Moses and the prophets. They should listen to them.' He said, 'No, Father Abraham, but if someone goes to them from the dead, they will repent.' He said to them, 'If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead.'" Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God. Well, just put that over here for a moment while I say to you that it is a joy to be here with you today in this place. I want to thank several people who helped make this possible. Brandy Williams, where are you? I can't find you over here. She's back there. Okay, so Brandy emailed me once or twice a week between when we first started doing this and kept me updated, made sure I had everything in line and knew what to expect. I want to thank her for that. Reverend Linus Viad, who when I looked at the video to see what the service was going to look like, since I'm an Episcopal priest, I thought I'd better brush up on my Presbyterian. I took a look, and it happened to be the Sunday before she was ordained, and she was preaching about being ordained. So I am glad to be here after the fact when you are the Reverend Linus Viad. I want to thank the governing board, which I think is a church session, deacons and trustees. I want to thank you for your invitation to be here. I want to thank my friends Melanie and Dudley Glenn, who helped do all the arrangements to get me here and to have this happen. So I have to say that I have a bit of a connection with this church. My mother was Marilyn Suddeth Hansen. Maybe some of you know her. She was Bill Teague's assistant at St. Mark's for years and years. She founded the Shreveport Boy Choir. She taught at St. Vincent's Academy after I had gone, but my sisters got to have their own mother for a teacher there. She taught music there and had a madrigal group. And I look out and I see some of my friends from St. Vincent's out here, and thank you for being here, and I see family. So in this place, Norman and Florence Fisher, who I know were here for years and years, were my mother's best friends. They and Bill and Lucille Teague, they had kind of this music, sort of unofficial music club about them. And they shared things back and forth. They shared stories. They shared sayings. They shared ways of approaching to do text with people, not just teach them the music of a hymn or an anthem, but to really look at what the text is saying. And I heard those lessons over and over again from Mama, from Norman and Florence, from Bill Teague, about pay attention to the text. And that's what I want to do this morning. I want to take what is kind of a hard text from this Gospel of Luke, this parable about a rich man and Lazarus. And I want us to pay close attention to some things about the text. So as I thought back over this text, the word chasms kept jumping out to me. And probably because we have an awful lot of chasms in our world today that need bridging. And I thought, how odd, this is a parable that I drew for this Sunday. And it's about unbridgeable chasms. But then when I started sitting with the parable for a while and contemplating it and studying it in some like reputable commentaries and by biblical scholars, it reminded me of a couple of things. First, it reminded me that Jesus really wasn't talking about the afterlife. Jesus was trying to talk about this life. And I'll say a little bit about that. That's one of the three things I want to address in this text. Another is that there's a prayer by a good Presbyterian minister, William Sloan Coffin. He died in 2006. Anybody heard of William Sloan Coffin? He was an ordained Presbyterian minister, but he served in lots of different places. One was the big Riverside Church in New York City. So one's a prayer that helps me bring this parable back to earth instead of getting it sort of up there about something, about an afterlife that none of us have experienced yet and have ideas about but don't really know about, right? I mean, anybody been there and back? Didn't think so. And then the third thing is simply a childhood memory that I try to carry with me in some way or another as I go about trying to bridge chasms in my own daily life. So let me talk first about sort of my experience with this parable and other congregations. You know, I've been at this preaching thing since 1978 or something like that. I started as a layperson before I was ever ordained, and I'm technically retired now. But this parable in a cycle of readings comes up every 3 years, so I've had a chance to preach on it an awful lot. And just about every time something happens in the fellowship hour after that where somebody comes up to me and says something that shows me that they really didn't get past the first little part about Lazarus being in what they say is heaven and the rich man being in what they say is hell. They've gotten stuck there somehow. One time, I was in a very big downtown wealthy congregation, a rich woman came up to me, very wealthy woman, wonderful in philanthropy throughout the things. I mean, just gave from her money, gave from her heart. And she said, did that Bible passage mean that rich people can't go to heaven? And I thought, whoops, I don't think she got past that. And another time, then I was in a suburban parish, and this time it was a lawyer. And he was a successful lawyer, six-figure salary, but he had a huge family that kind of ate up most of that six-figure salary. He came up and he said, well, I sure don't have to worry about anything because I sure am not rich. And then one time in the little inner city parish where I work now and where I was the senior pastor for 8 years, one time, it was a middle-aged woman came up to me. She was a woman that worked about three jobs, was taking care not only of her own children and grandchildren, but also some other relatives. And she came up and she said, well, she said, I guess that man got what he deserved. But she said, I sure do feel sorry for him. And I thought, man, none of these people got past thinking about an afterlife where some people go to heaven and some people go to hell. And see, they got stuck there. And that wasn't where Jesus was. I mean, this was a story that was a common story in his day and time. He wasn't trying to give a picture of the afterlife and who went to heaven and who went to hell. What he was trying to do, and if you back up a few chapters and read this, you see he's talking to the religious leaders of the day, And he's trying to get them to see something. He's trying to get them to see that sometimes their regulations and their strictures and the things that they think are what's going to get them to heaven or keep them in favor with God are not the things they need to be focused on. He's trying to tell them they need to be focused on this life, not the next. So the first thing as we approach this text is, can you just let go of the idea that this has to do with heaven and hell? Can everybody just do what you need to do? Just get that off your plate, okay? This does not have to do with who's going to heaven and who's going to hell. This has to do with the bridgeable chasms that are in this life that we don't even always see. It's not even always that we see them and we choose not to do anything about them. Sometimes we just don't notice what those chasms are, and they could be bridgeable. And so that's where my second point, this prayer by William Sloan Coffin, comes in. William Sloan Coffin was a clergyman and an activist. He always stood up for the rights of the unjust, and he always tried to bridge the chasms that existed between people with the thinking that maybe it was the fault of the poor that they were poor, or the fault of the whoever the them is that they were like the way they were. He tried to bridge that, and he had this prayer that he usually said at the end of a worship service. He said, "May God give us the grace not to sell ourselves short." In other words, there's really things we can do. Don't sell yourself short. He said, "May God give us the grace to risk something big for something good," because he tried to risk things from time to time, and there are days that we all have to risk things, risk not getting everything done that we want to do in order to do something that somebody needs to do. Have you ever had a day like that, where you could see that somebody really needed you to do something and you just had to put all that to-do list on the shelf? I'm seeing heads nod. You know what that looks like. You bridged a chasm. You bridged a chasm between thinking you had to get your to-do list done and instead noticing the need that somebody right in front of you had. Like the Lazarus, right in front of the man who lived in the house with the gate. Then the next line of the prayer asks for grace again, but this time grace to remember that the world is now too dangerous for anything but truth, and too small for anything but love. Those are the lines that just kept running through my mind as I contemplated this parable, that the world we live in, the world he lived in, the world most people live in at whatever time in history, is always too dangerous for anything but the truth. And that's why the truth that this isn't just about an afterlife, and it is the truth about this life, is so important. And the world is too small, especially today, for anything but love. And we speak a lot about love. I love my phone. I love my dog. I love our backyard. I love my husband. I love my children. I love my grandchildren. I love my family. I love you friends of mine. They're out here. I probably even will leave this place today loving it, every single one of you, because you asked me to be here. Lots of different kinds of love, but there's one thing that always distinguishes love from anything else, no matter how we think we feel it. And that is this, and if there's not anything else you remember from what I say today, please remember this. You can tell it's love because love always aims for the overall well-being of the other and for the flourishing of the other. Think of your children, if you have children, or a niece or a nephew. You love them with a love that what you decide to do with them, you're trying to aim for their overall well-being and yours, you're in that overall well-being too, and your spouse's and your friends and everything else. You're aiming for that and aiming for the flourishing. And sometimes you get there and sometimes you don't. But love always aims for it, and love always is willing to acknowledge the truth when they're not making that mark. If you don't remember anything else today, please remember that love's aims are the most important thing to behold and befriend each day. And that brings us to grace. Grace is just that Spirit of God within us, the love energy of God always flowing within us and always flowing around us through other people, that sometimes wakes us up to the truth, that sometimes lets us know that maybe we are a little off aim and that maybe we need to come back a little bit towards the aims of love. And you know what I've found in my life as I try to now live that day by day and moment by moment? It makes a difference. When I approach life with the idea that in any given moment, I want to be in tune with that love energy, mine and God's, flowing within. I want to be in tune with that love energy, yours and the world's and all creation's flowing with that. I want to be in tune with it enough to where I want to act in that moment in a way that bridges a chasm so that all of us can be well and so that all of us can flourish. So I want to close with a story that's a childhood memory. Because you know what? Sometimes children more naturally bridge chasms than others. Have you ever been to Betty Virginia Park here in town off of Fairfield? Okay. You know how there's that big culvert that runs through it? And now it looks like there's lots of bridges. As a child, I just remember kind of one bridge. Maybe it's because that's where we parked that day. But we crossed the bridge. It was an American Guild of Organists picnic. So Norman and Florence were there with their children. Bill and Lucille Teague were there with their children. Mama and Daddy were there with all of us. And all of us met me at about 5, the twins at about 3, and Marilyn at about 2. And Amy wasn't even on the radar yet. So there we are, and there's all this going on. There's a playground at that time. This would have been about 1955. There's a playground over this way. Most of the American Guild of Organists, we were all spread out. We each family had a blanket, and we were spread out on quilts or blankets. And then if you went down this way a little bit, there was a bridge that went over the chasm to what was then kind of a field. I think there's some soccer things on it now. And so we had had the picnic, and Mama and Daddy had taken the little ones, to the playground, and it was geared for little ones. I was 5. I didn't consider myself a little one anymore. But no other children there were 5 years old. And all the older children who were, let's see, Linda Gale was about 2 or 3 years older than I. She was about 8. And the others seemed to be in that range that were on the other side of the field. And Ma and I said, I don't want to stay here. I want to just go walk around. Well, Daddy immediately knew what I was going to do if I would just walked around. So he suggested that I not go across the bridge. So I went to that bridge, and I stood at the very edge of it, and I looked over that culvert at those kids that were having a wonderful time, the big kids. They were having a great time. They were playing ball. They were playing tag. They were running around, just having a great time. When all of a sudden, Linda Gale Teague, 3 years older, about 8 years old, notices me on the other bank. Now, she could have just gone back to playing, but she didn't. She stopped. She stopped and kind of motioned to me to come on, and I just shook my head because I knew what would happen if I crossed that bridge. It was not going to be fun. So she crossed the bridge. She crossed the bridge to me because I couldn't go where she was, and she could still get to where I was. And she went back with me to my parents and told them that she would watch after me. And so then she took my hand, and together we crossed the bridge, and I got to play with the big kids. Now, it's a simple story, but the point is, she had noticed that not only was I on the other side, but there was really some reason why I couldn't cross that bridge. And she had to be willing to leave her play to-do list. She had to be willing to leave that behind and cross over to where I was. That's the way to behold and befriend a chasm that's right in front of your face, whether it's an internal thing or an external thing. That's the way to bridge a chasm, by beholding what is true, that sometimes the person or the people on that other side really can't get across the bridge. And then befriending that truth by crossing over yourself to get to know that person better and to get to know what can be done with and for that person to help them cross the bridge too. I thank you for having me here today. May God bless you and keep you, and may you always see to behold and befriend what is and what can be beautiful, good, and true in every moment of your life. Amen.